to episode 715 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Marvel Chronology episode, and we're going to be continuing the Thanos reading order with Captain Marvel number 30, cover dated January 1974. And it is brought to you by Jim Starlin. Again, just cosmic, legendary, early Jim Starlin telling the story that up to this point he always had planned. And really, when you look at it, I mean, granted, he's done other things, Dread Star, and he's had runs on Batman, Captain America, that kind of thing. But really, this is his story, right? This is the one that he conceived of, that he always wanted to tell, starting with Iron Man 55 and then shifting over to Captain Marvel, which obviously was a much better fit. You know, creating Thanos, creating the idea of this race of, you know, super intelligent advanced beings that lived on Saturn's moon of Titan. And he really was creating this from whole cloth, as indicated by the fact that he has been, for the last two issues, writing, drawing, and coloring this story. Previously, he'd been plotting it, but he had Mike Friedrich helping him out with the scripting, the dialogue. Now Starlin has taken over all on his own. And one thing I don't think that I've mentioned on the podcast up to this point is the fact that Captain Marvel was a bi-monthly book. So it was only coming out every other month. So yes, things were different back then. Artists seemed to be able to draw more quickly. I think it has a lot to do with the style and the level of detail. You know, there wasn't quite as much detail, smaller panels. You didn't need as much detail in a lot of the comics from the Bronze Age, and this is clearly early Bronze Age, as opposed to today's comics where you get a lot of splash pages or just more detail in the art itself. So a different style, I don't know that one's necessarily, you know, that much better than another. Again, just a different style, a different time. But that being said, even though it was a different style, a different time, you know, Starlin, his art tends to be pretty detailed, a little closer to today's art, as opposed to some of the other artists that were working, some of his contemporaries that were working at the time that he was introducing Thanos and producing this legendary Captain Marvel run. Starlin's art was more detailed than a lot of his other artists that were working at the time. So it kind of explains the bi-monthly schedule, right? He needed time to plot it. He needed time to come up with the dialogue, do the art, and have it colored, right? Like, so he would do the pencils, ship it over to Al Milgram, and Milgram would ink it, probably send it back, and then Marvel would color, Starlin would color it rather, and then you've got your complete comic. So there have been writers and artists over, writer-artists, I should say, over time who have written and drawn monthly books. And, you know, Jack Kirby was legendarily fast. John Byrne's another who I think at one time in the 80s was writing and penciling Fantastic Four and Alpha Flight at the same time. And these days, it sort of boggles the mind. And you talk to artists that work currently, and a lot of them work digitally, and that's, you know, even faster than doing things on traditional paper, and they're kind of shocked. They're like, well, I just don't understand how these guys could have been so fast. So, you know, again, a different time. I'm not going to debate on which is better or not, but I just wanted to point that out. I noticed it. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot that Captain Marvel had been a bi-monthly book, and it sort of explains how Starlin was able to get so much of this done himself and to kind of, and he, you know, Starlin, he himself has admitted that he's kind of a control freak, and he likes to be able to have, you know, more control. So at least early on in his career. So it makes a lot of sense that he's, you know, plotting and scripting and drawing and coloring. It gives him a lot more control, and it's basically him being able to have what appears on the page be close to what he envisioned, closer to what he envisioned, as opposed to him giving up some level of control. So anyway, on to the issue. It starts off, we have a splash page. We see Captain Marvel there, as well as Iron Man, Rick Jones' head floating in the background. You know, he's in the negative zone, and he's urging on Captain America and Iron Man while they're he's telling them, hurry up, you know, while you're playing mad scientist, my girl Luann is crying, to be free from control, he says, which I suppose is the I don't know if it's the name of the issue, because we do, it's kind of, I suppose it's the first half of the issue is titled that. I don't know. It's not really clear, because later on we get another big sort of splash page with another title, if you will, you know, more giant letters indicating that's a title. I'm not really sure. Anyway, Marvel is imploring Rick to have patience. They'll never be able to locate Luann without the device that Iron Man is making for them, which I immediately thought, well, wait, didn't you just get this cosmic awareness and Eon was telling you that you'd be able to sense like a certain speck of dust or a certain grain of sand on a certain beach, you know, millions of light years away, and you don't have to do anything near that challenging. You just have to figure out where Luann is. I don't know, maybe the controller's control discs somehow mask where they are from Captain Marvel. I don't know. To me, it's a little bit of a plot hole, but we're going to let it slide. Meanwhile, Iron Man is saying that the computer's assembler is signaling that the controller tracer is almost complete. And a little arm pops out of this machine, whatever it is, and drops this tracer into Iron Man's hand. And he's saying they were able to determine the control frequency while Luann was in Avengers Mansion. So that, along with the knowledge that Captain Marvel has of Kree communications, has allowed them to make this tracer quickly. And Iron Man's saying, but I'm afraid that's the easy part. Now once we find the controller, we have to defeat him. And the fact that he derives power from all these people under his control means that he is a very powerful foe. And Captain Marvel says, yes, he's a force I must counter. And in order to stop the spreading cancer known as Thanos, I will stop him. And we get a little bit of a recap here. Captain Marvel is telling us, or telling Iron Man rather, how the controller serves Thanos, who has plans for galactic conquest, and the controller is only a small pebble in the mountainous scheme that Thanos is undertaking. And he's also thinking back to how the controller defeated him previously, buried him under two stories of rubble from the Avengers Mansion, and then kidnapped his alter ego's friend. Obviously, he's referring to Rick Jones, which I always take exception to that alter ego term. Captain Marvel and Rick Jones are two completely separate beings. It's not like alter ego in terms of Superman and Clark Kent, where one turns into the other. They merely switch places. So, you know, the alter ego thing just doesn't really make sense. It's not what it actually is. I don't know if secret identity has been used either, but it's kind of strange. I mean, the way that this story was set up with Jones and Captain Marvel switching places in the negative zone is interesting enough and a kind of a way to give Rick Jones superpowers, except not really, right? Because again, like I said, they're two separate and distinct beings, you know? I guess the closest I can think of off the top of my head would be Firestorm. But I think even in that instance, you know, Ronnie Raymond and Professor Stein, they both have to be present. Their bodies merge together. And then Stein is sort of, you know, that talking head. I don't know that we ever did find out where he went, or if it was just a way to sort of symbolize that Stein's voice would be in Ronnie Raymond's head. So even that is not quite the same. This is much different because they physically switch places, and Rick Jones is still, you know, existing, his body and everything. It's just that he's in the negative zone. So maybe it's a little nitpick, but it's just strange that they talk about it as being an alter ego, because it's not that. They're completely separate beings. They have their own thoughts, their own opinions, their own ideas, and it's interesting enough, like I said, that. And I can't even remember who did it, if it was Roy Thomas or somebody else who merged Rick Jones and Captain Marvel, or linked them together. I shouldn't say merged, because again, they're separate and distinct. But, you know, basically joined them together through the use of the negative band. So anyway, every time it comes up in the issue, it kind of pulls me out, because in the back of my mind, I'm going, no, wait, that's not the case. That's not your alter ego. It's not your secret identity. It's not your other self. It's just your friend or your colleague or your compatriot or whatever you want to call it, your comrade who you're swapping places with. So Anyway, Captain Marvel goes on to continue the recap, saying, before he could free himself from the rubble and save Luann, a strange creature called Eon whisked him off through space, and that would prove to be the most important meeting of Captain Marvel's life. But it did give the controller time to escape. And so Iron Man's like, okay, well, what now? And Marvel says, well, now I thank you for your aid. You've really given me a lot of help, but this affair started out as my responsibility, so the ending must also be my responsibility. Which is kind of interesting to me as well, that Marvel is sort of turning down help. Maybe because it's his title, although obviously that's not a meta reason for him to do it. And it's really sort of the kind of thing the old Captain Marvel would do, like previous to last issue, previous to the metamorphosis, previous to the cosmic awareness that he was granted, and the kind of the difference in him that starts to manifest itself that Iron Man's going to comment on in a second here, because it's a matter of pride, right? Which the sort of the old Captain Marvel had in spades, and it seems like he would be willing to turn down help or turn up his nose at someone offering him help because, you know, he's the proud Kree warrior and he's got to fight for his honor, and his honor might be diminished if he were helped in some kind of quest he's on. And so Iron Man himself is like, wait a second, the controller tore apart Avengers Mansion and you're lucky to be alive. You may not be so lucky the next time. What do you got to say to that? And Captain Marvel said, was a different time and a different Captain Marvel. And he turns to leave, and Iron Man's thinking to himself, well, you said a mouthful. I don't know what happened to you out there, but it's clear that that Eon creature changed you, and it's more than just your physical self that seems altered. You know, all of a sudden, you don't seem so righteous and headstrong, and you seem much more calm and confident, a man I'm almost in awe of, and I'm not sure why, which sort of gets to the change we eventually see, right, where Captain Marvel is all of a sudden elevated to this level of respect. Everybody in the Marvel Universe in terms of heroes starts to sort of look up to him as this wise and very powerful person that they have a lot of respect for. But again, I don't know that like Captain Marvel refusing help from Iron Man really says that. Doesn't it say the opposite in a way? I suppose the confidence is there. And maybe it's just something that you can't quite put your finger on or doesn't necessarily come across in the comic. And maybe that's why we have this exposition from Iron Man to let us know. Yeah, so Marvel says he's got to do it himself. But when he says that, like the way he says it, sort of the feelings that he's projecting, the aura that he is surrounding him is one that's much different from that, you know, headstrong, prideful Kree warrior that Iron Man's familiar with. So Iron Man decides to let it be. It's like, okay, if Captain Marvel wants to do it on his own, I think I'm going to head out west to where I first met Thanos and see if I can maybe find some help for this strange war we've been forced into. And we get a little editor's note that says, those of you who have read Marvel feature number 12 will already know what Iron Man's going to find. But if you haven't caught up yet, shame. And that's a note from editor Roy Thomas. Now, that's the issue I'll actually cover next, is Marvel feature number 12, which kind of happens concurrently with this issue 30 of Captain Marvel. So that'll be on the next Marvel Chronology episode. So Captain Marvel then heads home, actually, and Rick Jones is like, what are you doing? Captain Marvel's like, I sense your anger and frustration. What troubles you? He says, you trouble me. You got the tracer gizmo, and you should be heading out to find him. Instead, you're heading home. What's the matter? Are you too tired from all that heavy button pushing that you and Iron Man did to go save my girl? And Captain Marvel's like, no, I'm assuring that the mission to rescue her is going to be successful. Without a beat, Rick Jones says, yeah, how you doing that, Blondie? So he's moved on from Silvertop as a nickname, and now it's Blondie. So I will say that right away from issue 29, which again, both these issues, 29 and 30, really all the Bronze Age books in comparison to titles these days are pretty wordy. You know, they're pretty dialogue heavy, a lot of exposition. Again, just a difference in style. But I will say that I vastly prefer Starlin's scripting to Mike Friedrich. I think Friedrich was, I think he got his start in the Silver Age. And so his his dialogue tended to be a little more hokey. And so I think that Starlin's scripting holds up a lot better when you go back and reread this stuff in modern times. But still, he can't resist a little Rick Jones nicknaming. And again, Blondie, that's one that I've actually heard people use in conversation. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody call someone Silvertop. I don't know, maybe it would be taken in a disparaging manner. If somebody had gray hair, you're reminding them, you know, gray hair, silver hair is more associated with old age, I suppose, whereas, you know, blonde is blonde. And so anyway, Captain Marvel says, what I'm doing is I'm not impetuously confronting the controller at night when my photonic powers are at their lowest. So again, a change in Captain Marvel, a little more wisdom, a little more logic. He's not rushing off headstrong to, you know, attack the controller when he knows that he's not as powerful as he could be. So meanwhile, while Captain Marvel and Rick Jones are having this conversation, Jarvis shows up and says, "Sorry to interrupt. I'm looking for Master Rick. There's somebody here that wants to see him." And Marvel says, "Hold on, I'll grab him for you." Bangs his negative bands together, and they switch places. And we will see in a couple of pages who has showed up basically in the middle of the night at Avengers Mansion to talk to Rick Jones. Then the scene shifts on the following page to the controller's headquarters. He is there, and he is imploring his imbeciles that he has under his control to worship him. And they are bowing before him. They are saying, "Hail Thanos, hail the controller." The exposition that Starlin gives us talks about the fact that everyone there, including Luann, who stands healthy and beautiful, is empty of intelligence. Their eyes seem vacant, glazed over. They lack any sign of life. That applies to everybody in the room except for the controller. So he says, "Thank you for the touching tribute. I also thank you for your awesome strength you give me while wearing the slave discs. Thousands are wearing the discs, and I now possess the power of thousands and your mind to command. And thanks to Thanos improving my slave discs, I'm now in complete control over any of the people who wear them." And then Thanos' face appears on a screen behind the controller, calling him a fool, saying, "Disperse this crowd immediately. These people are control slave agents to use for when I attack Earth. And if you've blown their cover with your insane ego boosting, I will heap the pain and tortures of the galaxy upon your black soul. The only thing that saves you from my wrath is I have use for you now." And so Thanos goes on to say that Captain Marvel will soon pay you a visit, and he is seeking to rescue a girl that you have in your charge. And when he arrives, kill him. And any failure to do so will mean that I will use the power of the cosmic cube to destroy you. Little bit of a plot hole here. If Thanos can use the cosmic cube to destroy the controller, and he wants Captain Marvel dead, then why doesn't he just use the cube to destroy Captain Marvel? It's never quite clear, but, you know, I guess comics. So, anyway, Thanos signs off by saying, "I will turn the cube on the one who has poorly served me. If you fail, is that clear?" And the controller says, "It's perfectly clear. I won't fail you, Master." And meanwhile, at Avengers Mansion, Rick Jones finds out that the person visiting him is a businessman named Mordecai P. Boggs, who apparently Rick had secured a loan from previously. And he's like, "If you hear about the money I owe you, I'm pretty broke, and I don't have it for you at this time." And Mordecai says, "Well, no need to reproach yourself. That's fine. I've heard that you've been doing great things, praiseworthy work involved with the Avengers, great publicity. And what I'm hoping is that you will accept my offer for me to make you a star, the idol of teenage America, if you just come work for me." And Jones says, "Well, you know what? You actually have great timing, because I'm broke. I don't really have anywhere to go. And if you want yourself a singer, then yeah, I think I will take your deal. But I just need some time to finish up a few things over the weekend." And so Mordecai happily says, "Yeah, sure, great. Let's meet at that popular cafe in Manhattan's Greenwich Village on Monday." And so as Mordecai leaves, Jones says, you know, that dude's been all right to me. I sure hope I can make that appointment on Monday. I mean, I'm going to try, but again, I've got things to do this weekend, including saving my girl from an abomination as strong as the Hulk. So if I don't make it to my meeting, it will be because I'm dead. So Rick is, he seems pretty determined. But again, it's not him rescuing his girl. It's Captain Marvel. So it, again, I was pulled out of the story a little bit thinking to myself, no, it's not that way, right? You are not Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel is not you. Two separate beings. But I mean, obviously where Captain Marvel goes, so you go in a way. So I get it, sort of. But again, it's sort of weird. So as we turn the page, I guess this you would consider this chapter two of this book, because like I mentioned before, we do get another big title, so to speak. The first four panels, it says morning, and we see the sun rising up over the skyline of New York, followed by that title, which is A Time for Confrontation. So we see Marvel leaving Avengers Mansion, flying through the air, saying a new day has come. No longer will Thanos' reign of terror go unchecked. I'm here to protect the victims of the madman's schemes. Today is the day Luan shall be freed, for this day is Captain Marvel's. And as he's flying through the air, it's so obvious, we notice right away, there's all these little stars and sparkles, if you will, in his wake, so to speak, his jet stream, to the point where Rick Jones even comments on it. Very pretty speech, Marv, but I've got some disturbing news for you. You've developed a sparkling trail behind you when you fly. And Captain Marvel's like, yeah, that's obviously a side effect from the physical change Eon put me through. It seems to be something on the order of photonic energy exhaust, but it doesn't seem to have an effect on me or the atmosphere, and so I guess we can return our attentions to more pressing matters. So, I mean, not only has Starlin added this, whatever you want to call it, this sparkling trail or this photonic energy exhaust to Captain Marvel, I'm not sure why. Maybe he just thought it would be unique or interesting or give more flair. It's not, again, I'm not 100% sure why it was added. And then another thing is I'm certainly not sure of why they comment on it in the story. I suppose that Starlin was going to be expecting people to comment on it. Well, why does Captain Marvel all of a sudden have these little sparkles behind him when he flies? And so he takes a whole panel here, panel and a half, to talk about it. So, yeah, pretty interesting. It certainly wouldn't go over these days when it seems like real estate, every panel in a modern comic is prized for advancing the story. I don't know that you would see something like that nowadays. And it was kind of funny to see it explained in the story itself. So Captain Marvel says the tracer is working. It's already located the controller. They've found a four-story building that must be his villainous haven. And Captain Marvel asks Rick, time for a decision. The controller has already defeated us before. And I won't risk our lives again on such an adventure unless we agree it's a necessity. What is your opinion, my friend? And Rick says, get on, Marvel. So Marvel crashes through the door. And the controller's there, remarking that Captain Marvel's there earlier than he expected, but it's not too early to die. And Captain Marvel is immediately surrounded by three of the controller's henchmen, people, large humans, I would say, bruising specimens who are under his control. But before the fight can ensue, Marvel says, well, wait, I've not come to fight. I've come to talk. And the controller says, wrong. Waste him. And in the period of the space of one panel, we see a kabash thum karam sound effects. And then Captain Marvel calmly says, as I've said, I've come to talk, Mr. Sandhurst. And we get a great panel of the controller immediately turning his head like, what? There's no way you could have beat those guys so quickly. But again, this is the new Captain Marvel, the more powerful Captain Marvel. And it's not the Kree warrior who rushes in headstrong, looking for a fight, looking to establish victory. Victory is all that matters, honor, and all that nonsense. Again, this is someone who's looking for resolution but not necessarily looking for violence. And so he goes on to say, yes, I know your real name, Controller. I read Iron Man's files on you. I know there was a tragic accident that ravaged your body, and it's seemingly forced you into the life you lead now. But I'm telling you, you're doing wrong, and you're doing harm to yourself. And the Controller's like, you know, he's not used to this. Like, someone trying to talk to him and actually interested in him. Like, what are you babbling about? I'm fine. I've done all right by myself. I have wealth, and soon I'll have the power that I desire. And Captain Marvel says, but that's wrong, right? You're wasting your energies upon dreams of grandeur, and you're letting the priceless treasures of inner peace and truth elude you. And I think that's where Starlin is trying to sort of a little heavy-handedly, admittedly, kind of hitting us over the head with it, but show us that that's what Captain Marvel has found, right? That's what Eon was able to instill in him, and what Captain Marvel now embraces, the fact that violence is not the answer, and there's much more important things in the universe, such as, you know, being at peace with yourself and understanding truth. And the Controller doesn't want to hear anything about that, right? He's like, peace? Truth? Bah! With enough power, you can create your own peace and truth. And of course, Marvel has an answer for that too. But those are counterfeit values, Controller. Use your brain, Basil Sandhorse. Use it! Now you serve Thanos of Titan, the most dire menace of in the entire universe. His power, deceit. His goal, conquest. His way, destruction. His reward, death. Death like he paid to Scrag and Super Skrull for their loyalty. Right? Captain Marvel is trying to save the Controller through talk. So kind of interesting, especially in this time of comics where it was much more, you know, kind of the fight of the week, freak of the week, if you will. So interesting what Starlin's doing here. And he's right, really. I mean, we know Thanos is just a user at the end of the day. But the Controller doesn't want to hear any of it. He's saying, you fool, Thanos has freed me and given me greater power than I ever imagined. And Captain Marvel, again, kind of reminding him, yeah, because you're useful to him. And if you outlive that usefulness, watch how long your benefactor allows you to exist. And the Controller's like, that's it. I'll hear no more. You're trying to confuse me. You're trying to drive me back to the asylum Thanos freed me from. The master commands and I obey, so I must kill you now. And there's a huge fight, and Captain Marvel at this point stops talking, and Starlin says, no verbal response does Marvel see fit to give. Rather, he gracefully avoids Sandhurst's deadly blow and grabs hold of his off-balance foe's leg. And the next thing the Controller knows, he finds himself crashing through the lab's wall. And Rick Jones is like, well, I've seen speed and I've seen speed, but Lordy Marvel, where'd you learn that move? So again, it's just indicative of the increased speed and reflexes and strength that Captain Marvel has gained through the metamorphosis of last issue. But I also like, as the fight starts, that Starlin points out, yeah, so there'll be no more talking, so to speak. Marvel was more than fair with Controller. He tried to reason with him. He tried to reach him. He tried to give him a chance. But once the decision is made, then that's it. There's no reason for braggadocio or comment. It's almost as though there's a bit of a sadness here, where Captain Marvel being forced to violence is not happy about it. So he does answer Rick Jones, saying about where I got the speed. He says, from the creature called Eon, who taught me many things, and I'll tell them of you later. So the Controller has fallen to the street below, four stories down. And as he starts to recover, interesting dialogue here, because all this time, the Controller, whenever he speaks, kind of has a mustache-twirling aspect to him. And so it's weird when he uses a colloquialism. He tossed me out of my own building like a sack of potatoes. It's just strange to hear him use slang, right? Because then immediately in the next sentence, it's much more in tone with how he normally speaks. For this indignity, he must pay with his life. So meanwhile, inside, Captain Marvel is searching the lab at top speed to find out where Luann is. He knows that Captain Marvel knows that the Controller likely kept her there in case he needed a hostage. And he does find her relatively quickly. But as he does find her, the controller smashes through the wall, saying, "You've had it, Marvel. You've gotten me angry, and that's a big mistake." And the controller mentions how getting him angry basically means that Captain Marvel has gotten over 1,000 people angry. That anger adds to their strength, which in turn adds to the controller's strength. And thanks to Thanos, he's able to control more people than ever and have more power than ever. And it's all the strength that he needs. And what will happen with all those people he controls is that when Thanos shows up with his fleet of space marauders to attack Earth, at that moment, his thousands of followers and carefully selected agents will execute pre-programmed missions, and those missions will sabotage Earth's defenses, leaving it easy pickings for Thanos and his well-equipped army and the power of the Cosmic Cube. Thanos' goal is worldwide domination, and the Earth is only a stepping stone, so once Thanos has conquered Earth, he will leave the controller in charge of Earth as his viceroy, and that will help the controller realize his greatest ambition, to rule over all of Earth. As the controller finishes up his little monologue here, he notices something. For the first time, he actually looks at Marvel's face, like looks him in the eye, and he realizes something very disturbing. This is not the same guy that he fought just yesterday. It's not the man the controller humbled at Avengers Mansion. This is not the coward Sandhurst thought he had been facing. Which is interesting that Thanos calls the previous Captain Marvel a coward. This is not the coward Sandhurst thought he had been facing. Like, I'm not sure what about Captain Marvel before could be considered cowardly. It's a pretty interesting choice of words, but anyway, the controller realizes that this is a man to be reckoned with. This is a man who's conquered and beaten vanity and pride and is seeing the universe as it is. So again, much like Iron Man did early on in the issue, the controller is sensing a difference in Captain Marvel. This is a man who has knowledge and he wishes to share that knowledge. He knows truth and he knows peace. And the knowledge and the truth and the peace must all be protected. And this man can protect it, for he is now cosmically aware. And in that panel where we find out, or we are reminded again that Captain Marvel is cosmically aware, we do see that effect on Captain Marvel's face, where all we see are the eyes and the rest of his face is replaced by a star field with planets and stars and comets and all that kind of crazy stuff. So Starling goes on to tell us that Captain Marvel knows strength, and he's able to sense weaknesses, and because of that, he knows when to strike. And again, he punches the controller, sending him through the wall of his headquarters. This time, he doesn't fall to the street below. He's not quite taken off guard like he was last time. He's able to use his jet boots to stop himself from falling, and Captain Marvel says, "I've got to engage him outside before he can return to the lab. As strong as the controller is, our battle could bring down the entire building, and I can't do that with Luann inside, so we've got to fight outside." So the controller's like, you're mad, you could have escaped with the girl, and instead you returned to attack me. And Captain Marvel says, "Well, it's because I now know the true depth of your depravity. I know the power you seek." He's used the cosmic awareness power to sort of look into the controller and understand what plan the controller plans to play in Thanos's coming invasion. And he says, "Because of this, I must cause the end of an empire." So the battle is an extremely violent one, with the controller saying, "You know, you're seeking to free these poor souls I've enslaved. All my enslaving these people has done is save my life and doom yourself." And he unleashes a huge punch that actually stuns Captain Marvel, and the controller says, "Basically, this has come down to a fight for survival. Thanos has decreed that you must die, and if I don't kill you, then he's going to kill me. So this has become a matter of survival, and the controller will survive." So again, it's several pages here of a huge battle where The controller is unleashing all his power on Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel takes quite a beating, but he keeps getting back up. He won't give up, and the controller is surprised by just how much punishment Captain Marvel can take, and he's not willing to back down either, and eventually the tide starts to turn. And then as the tide does start to turn, we see Thanos appear before them, at least his disembodied head. And he says, "Look, Controller, look at the one you have failed. I, Thanos, future ruler of the universe. Though you're not defeated yet, a few more well-placed blows will finish you. You've served me poorly, and so you must pay." And Controller's like, no. Like, I'm still alive. There's still fight in me. And he begins to realize, well, so Marvel wasn't lying. He was telling the truth. You're a faithless leader. I was a fool for having served you. Then he asks Thanos, but why must I die? And as he says that, his die is like a final cry, die, as he basically blinks out of existence. And as Thanos's head starts to disappear as well, he tells Marvel, once again, you've surprised me. I thought you would be no match for the controller, but I sense that there's a change in you since our last meeting, and it's a change I would know more of, so I'm going to let you live a little longer. But that moment of your death, it's very near. So again, he doesn't kill Marvel because comics, I guess. He wants to understand that change. I mean, I suppose it does make sense because Thanos is very power hungry. And if there is some change that has given Captain Marvel more power, then Thanos would probably be interested in maybe attaining that for himself. But I don't know. I mean, Thanos has the Cosmic Cube in his hands, and yet he's using puppets and underlings and machinations to gain control. I mean, he has the Cosmic Cube. Can he just like wish for the universe to bow at his feet? It doesn't make a lot of sense other than, yeah, comics. So anyway, Marvel is standing there alone. Once again, the battle is over. He's survived. And the look on his face, I wouldn't say frustrated, but the look on his face here doesn't necessarily convey that inner peace and truth that supposedly he has now. He's sort of gritting his teeth, and he has blood running from his nose. And I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. Maybe it's just the heat of the battle hasn't quite dissipated. But he has decided, Captain Marvel, that his energy has been depleted, and it's time for him to rest. So he does switch places once again with Rick Jones by clanging together the negative bands. And on this next to last page of the issue, a lot of dialogue, a lot of exposition as Starlin explains about Captain Marvel switching places with Rick Jones and Rick Jones feeling the fatigue of the battle. So there's, you know, a greater connection maybe than I was giving this arrangement credit for earlier. They are two separate beings, but Rick Jones does carry the burden of Marvel's fatigue, as he's done countless times before, it says. We also get a sense that a lot of people that were previously controlled by the control discs are now free, and some of them wonder what the blank spaces are in their memories. Some of them remember what happened but keep it to themselves, because obviously you're not going to go around telling people, yeah, I was part of some cosmic conspiracy to overthrow the Earth and enslave all of mankind, because you weren't really in control of yourself. So, like I said, a lot of exposition of Starlin kind of cleaning things up and tying up plot threads. And then as the page finishes up, we see Drax the Destroyer showing up at Avengers Mansion, telling Jarvis that he's come to see Iron Man or the lone adventurer called Captain Marvel, and he's there on a matter of galactic urgency. And on the final page, we see Thanos sitting upon his chair, death not far away, saying, "I've wasted enough time. I have the Cosmic Cube. I've given my enemies ample time to lament the fates that gave me this power." So apparently that's why Thanos isn't just wishing for galactic conquest, galaxy domination, and just having it come true. He wants his enemies to suffer first. But now the power that he has, he'll now strike with. And others that have had the cube in the past, their vision has been small. They've only sought to further their own ambitions. They've looked for material wealth, or power. And what Thanos seeks is much more abstract, almost sacred. And then he goes on to say that the truth is he only really craves one wish. What that wish is, we don't actually know, but apparently we'll find out in the next issue of Captain Marvel, as it's entitled The Wish, with Captain Marvel, the Destroyer, Iron Man, and Mentor. And we're all encouraged to check it out by Roy Thomas. But as I said, there are a few other issues and parts of this story that need to take place first before we move on to Captain Marvel 30. I mentioned that Marvel feature number 12, which takes place during issue 30 here of Captain Marvel and continues in Captain Marvel 31. We also have some issues of Daredevil, specifically issues 105 to 107, which also take place during this issue and continue to 31. So I'll be moving on to Marvel feature 12, and then we'll go Daredevil 105, 106, 107. And then at that point, we will return to Captain Marvel with issue 31. Because when I did go to read issue 31 after I finished reading this one, I opened up 31, honestly, because I was really curious. Wait, so what's that wish, Thanos? Let me just kind of scan the first few pages and see if it's obvious there. And what becomes really apparent quickly is that, yeah, so there's a big chunk of story that must happen somewhere between the end of Captain Marvel issue 30 and Captain Marvel issue 31. And again, keep in mind what I mentioned at the beginning of the episode about how Captain Marvel at that time was bi-monthly. So you have a lot of other issues that are coming out between, right? So like you look at the Daredevil, which again, really interesting to have a crossover with Daredevil. Not exactly who you would think of in terms of Marvel heroes when you're talking cosmic, right? But if issue 105 came out the same month as issue 30 on Captain Marvel, that works. And then 106 came out the month that was a skip month for Captain Marvel. And then 107 comes out the same month as 31. So in that way, you can get three issues of Daredevil and it makes sense. And you're not waiting for issues to come out to read the story because you're going to get three issues of a monthly comic for every two issues you get of Captain Marvel. So again, it sort of makes sense. I'm assuming Marvel featured number 12 came out the same month as Captain Marvel number 30. So you're looking at Captain Marvel number 30, Marvel feature 12, and Daredevil 105 all in the same month. Then you're going to read Daredevil 106, and then you're going to come back and read Daredevil 107 and follow that up with Captain Marvel number 31 and then Avengers number 125. So that's kind of how this whole Thanos cosmic story plays out in terms of the issues to finish up Starlin's story. Obviously, it became pretty popular, right? Captain Marvel never went off the bi-monthly schedule, which I find interesting because, again, it did get really popular as opposed to when Starlin was first brought onto the book. Part of the reason they gave it to him, Roy Thomas gave it to him, is because it was in danger of being canceled. Nobody was reading it. But I suppose, like I mentioned earlier, with Starlin doing so much of the heavy lifting, the plotting, the scripting, the colors, and the pencils, he probably needed that extra time. So that's probably why it never went on to a monthly schedule. But you can tell that it did get much more popular. Starlin basically saved it from cancellation and created this character of Thanos and this cosmic corner of the Marvel Universe that became immensely popular, and that popularity continues to today, obviously with us seeing Thanos show up as a character in the most recent Avengers Infinity War movie, and he'll be returning to the big screen later this year for Avengers Endgame. So this is classic stuff. It's been reprinted in a lot of places. In fact, I think there's a collection called the Avengers Versus Thanos that not only collects all this Captain Marvel stuff, but it has a lot of the Avengers stuff as well. There are Thanos collections, there are Captain Marvel collections. So these issues aren't terribly expensive, most of them. There are a few that can get a little pricey. It's not like this version of Captain Marvel, the male version of Captain Marvel, is the one that's appearing in the Captain Marvel movie, which is coming out in just a few weeks here. but you know, it is name recognition, and it is these are Thanos issues, so they do have a little bit of value to them, more so than they would have maybe 10 years ago before Thanos was on the big screen. And so you can find them, and again, they're not terribly pricey, but if you're looking to just read the story, which I do recommend for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's fun, and it's Thanos, who I find to be an interesting character. Captain Marvel, who I always loved, but it's early Starlin work, and he's just a legend. And beyond my love of Captain Marvel, the fact that I like Thanos as a villain, although I think he's starting to get a little bit overexposed a la the Joker, more so than any of that, the fact this is Jim Starlin, who I will read anything Jim Starlin writes. I'll read anything Jim Starlin illustrates. I think the guy, again, is just a legendary creator. Love his Dreadstar stuff. I love his series he did with Malibu back in the day called Breed, from their Bravura imprint. I mean, I just absolutely adore that stuff. It's really, really great. So I do feel like this is worth picking up in trade. It's worth, to me, picking up in the actual issues, because again, this is classic stuff. But if you're looking to get it a little cheaper, you can probably pick up a trade or a big collection of it for the price of like a couple of issues. The early issues, which is like the second appearance of Thanos, even though it's sort of cameo, which I think is in issue 24 of Captain Marvel, certainly 25 commands a little bit of a premium, probably for the price of those two. 29 again, because it's the Metamorphosis issue with that famous cover. I'm sure for the price of 24, 25, 29, you can get yourself a nice, probably hardcover collection. But again, if you look around, you can find those harder to find issues at relatively reasonable prices. So either way, again, I think it's worth reading and worth checking out. And at the very least, you can continue listening to the Marvel Chronology and the Thanos Reading Order, and you'll find out what happens that way as well. So thanks everybody for joining us as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.